Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Nothing about that makes anyone nervous.
You're losing so badly.
You don't know what's happening.
Gentlemen.
Well, if I'm going to ask that, my time not be deducted.
That is a clip from last week's GOP debate hosted by CNN. The candidate exchanges were so raucous that at one point the closed caption simply read, "Unintelligible yelling." Reviews of moderator Wolf Blitzer were less than kind. Slate described him as ineffective. The New York Times' David Itzikoff tweeted, "Very intrigued by Blitzer's moderating strategy of do absolutely nothing at any time." But what does it take to be an effective moderator? Well, here with a firsthand account is John Donvan. He's host and moderator of the debate series Intelligence Squared US. John, great to have you on Word of Mouth.
Thanks, Virginia. It's great to be here.
So as a moderator, how do you feel watching these presidential debates? I mean, do you cringe?
Well, I cringe, but I often cringe on behalf of the moderator. The setup, the premises of these debates make it almost impossible for a moderator actually to act as a moderator. The candidates are not really signing on to the whatever rules are in place, or at least some of them aren't. And even even in the best of times, when you have moderators who do interrupt, try to shape things, they get bashed for taking sides by one side or the other. And if they stay sort of hands off and let the thing kind of take its own direction, as Wolf did, then they get bashed for not taking control. And the reality is that you need the candidates themselves to basically go in there agreeing to be moderated in order for the thing to work. And a lot of the times the candidates just ignore that.
So it's not Wolf Blitzer could have done things differently so much as it's the format that's to blame?
It's possible that with a lot of practice, Wolf could have figured out how to regain control of that. There could have been things that he might have said. And I've done it. I've done it in my own moderating where things have sort of fallen apart. And I've stopped at that moment, and I've reminded the debaters of what it is we're trying to do. And what I really am doing is I'm harnessing what I think is the disapproval of the audience of what's going on, and in a sense, trying to shame them into putting on a better debate than they are.
We've actually got a clip of you doing something very similar. This was moderating a debate, and the motion was, should the UN admit Palestine as a full member state? Let's hear just a little clip from the debate.
What delegitimizes Israel is when we maintain an occupation.
You cannot compare.
Passions are running high.
Political position from Israel.
And debate is robust.
For murder.
So I'd like to go to
Foreign Minister Lieberman did not call for murder. So don't put him in the same box as Hamas.
All right.
You're undermining the state of Israel.
I'm undermining the state of Israel.
Yes,
what undermines the state of Israel is your continued settlement project.
Daniel.
The settlements are not a big deal. The settlements are the death knell. The death knell of Israeli democracy.
Nobody is killing anybody.
So what was going on here for you, John, at that moment?
Well, two of the debaters who had been on opposite sides debating whether the UN should recognize Palestine, both of these men were, I think it's important that they were both Jews, on opposite sides of the motion. And the reason I say that is that each of them saw the other as something of a traitor to the Jewish people by the positions that they were taking. One was Daniel Levy, and one was the former ambassador, Dory Gold. And they had been sniping back and forth throughout the evening, but suddenly they just lost it, and it became very, very personal, and they began talking at the same time, as you heard, and they just began screaming over each other. And it was at that point, and I had, you know, you hear me trying to break in a number of times. Why am I breaking in? It's time to stop it. And I was failing. And so what I did was I left my position at the podium, and I went down to the head of the stage near the audience, and I just raised both my arms in a sort of Moses-like moment and just waited until they stopped. And then I went back to my lectern, and I explained that what just happened is not what our debate is about.
Exactly.
You know, what we aspire to here, and we just went through an episode of not doing it, is actually to shed light by arguing relevant facts, and all of these facts may be relevant to the larger argument. We're talking about the practicality or the morality of this motion.
Yes.
We would really ask you all to try to bring this level up to, and I do think settlements are completely relevant, and you made that point well, But we would like to ask you to bring this up to a level of keeping this on the facts that are happening here. Now I'm going to go to the questions, and I'm counting on you folks.
Most of the time when I insert myself in this way, which I try to do infrequently, most of the time when I call out the debaters for not debating well, they get a lot better, a lot faster.
Huh. Well, I mean, a conversation like that was due to be a powder keg. Can you anticipate whether a debate will turn into a shouting match?
Not necessarily. And the reason I say that there have been times when I really expected it to happen, and it didn't. And by the way, I'm not against a little passion. I mean, it's good for people to feel deeply about the issues that they believe in. The thing we want to do in the Intelligence Squared debates is to keep the debate actually in the shape of a debate that you can hear. And I don't consider a personal attack on one debater or the other to be a valid argument. That's just not true argumentation.
Well, during this presidential primary season, we are talking about what makes a great debate. John Donvan is with us. He is host and moderator of the debate series Intelligence Squared US. You know, how do you prepare yourself? I mean, how much moderating actually comes down to the in-the-moment decision when a debate is going on?
It's everything. I mean, people ask me, what have you learned about how to moderate? And to me, moderating is really two things. It's the art of listening extremely closely to what's going on in the moment, and it's the art of interrupting. And I interrupt a lot because I listen closely. And what I'm listening for is whether or not the debaters are actually making an argument and whether they're actually engaging with each other. And the temptation or the impulse to wander off from those two targets are very high. It happens in every debate. I'm finding that it took a lot of practice on my part. I've done now about 120 debates, and I got better at it. In the beginning, I wasn't so bold. I wasn't sure where to interrupt. I wasn't sure if I interrupted if I would be heard. And it turns out that I am. I've learned how to interrupt with respect, making the point that what I'm trying to do is to preserve the integrity of the debate, not to embarrass the debater by interrupting him or her, and not to score points for myself because I'm not what the debate is about, and not to help the other side.
I'm going to interrupt you and play a clip from a debate on the motion of whether ISIS would prevent political solutions in Iraq.
The point here is that he undid the political bargain that was reached during the surge. The further point is that the center of gravity of the fight against ISIS is not in the front lines. It's in Baghdad, in Iraqi politics, and indeed in various Syrian locations.
I have to stop you. I'm giving you a lot of leeway because of your service, but ultimately, democratically, I need to ask you to ask a question.
I know what question
okay.
it is.
Pop it. The question, can you be confident, Anne-Marie?
So this is a case of you interrupting someone who is pretty much used to complete deference. It was General David Petraeus. Now, mind you, he was asking a question from the audience. What was going on there?
We have a rule about questions from the audience, which is that they need to be very brief and they need to be questions that I don't accept having a member of the audience get up and begin to debate the debaters. I'm so very clear about that. So, yeah, you're right. General Petraeus got up to ask a question, and he began to debate with something he didn't like. And again, I mean, I think you can hear I'm not doing it in a rude way. Mm. I'm just doing it in a firm way, and I'm doing it in the interest of fairness. I mean, that's what I cite as fairness or, you know, applying the same rules to everybody.
Well, it certainly does take some chutzpah, though. You know, I mean, do you don't feel like this is all about you, but do you feel like you have to be in charge of what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, there's a really big difference between it's about me and being in charge. The principle I apply is I am preserving the integrity of the debate. Are these people debating? Are they staying on topic? Are they exchanging ideas? Are they respecting one another's presence on the stage? By that I mean, are they actually listening to the arguments that are being made and responding to them? I mean, another thing that personally drives me nuts, after many years as a journalist in Washington, you know, I always found it very frustrating to interview a politician who has walked up to the microphone with usually two, maybe three talking points, who has decided to use the occasion of an interview with me or any other journalist simply to assert his or her talking points and just say the same thing in answer to every question. And you see it happen all the time. Journalists rarely break in and say, that wasn't my question. If they do, most of the time, they kind of sound like jerks and that they're aggressive for doing so. It's tricky to do that. There was a debate a few years ago where John King of CNN whom I respect as a political journalist, he's fantastic, but he was moderating a debate last election round with Mitt Romney, and he did interrupt Mitt Romney, and he said, but that wasn't the question. And Romney said, John, you get to ask the questions you want, and I get to give the answers I want. And I think John made a mistake in not – John said, fair enough, Mr. Romney. I think John made a mistake by saying fair enough. That wasn't fair enough. He should have said, no, we're all here because of you signed on to this to answer questions, and you're not. He should have done it in a very non-threatening way. That would be a time for him to assert his authority as a moderator.
Well, John, network debates are getting better rating as they get more acrimonious. So do Americans really want that kind of civility? Do they really want somebody to ask a question and for it to be answered? Or are they looking for theater?
Well, I'm not pretending that the atmospherics aren't fun. I just can't say that, and I can't tisk tisk too much, because I've watched the season, and before you feel dirty for watching it and sad that it happened, there's a momentary thrill to see these guys, you know, going at each other. That said, when we do these debates for Intelligence Squared in New York, a really, really interesting thing happens. One is that we have the audience vote. They become voters in the debate. They vote on who won the debate. They vote before they've heard the arguments, and they vote again after they've heard the arguments. And we give victory to the side who's changed the most minds between the first and the second vote. And we have an enormous number of people who change their minds, who tell us afterwards. And why did that happen? It may be because they never heard the other side of the argument presented in a coherent way before. It may be that they, you know, in the echo chamber of politics today, people aren't hearing the other side. And maybe if there were a format presented where they could, they would rise to the occasion and find it exciting, just as exciting as it is to watch people sling mud at each other, find it kind of exciting to hear an idea that you've never heard before and to say, oh, I get it. And the other thing about our debates is, I go out into the lobby afterwards to say goodbye, you know, to shake hands with the audience as they leave. People are so buzzing at that point. The people are walking out onto the sidewalk, still like debating the debate. And people come out lit up intellectually by what they've just gone through, amazed that it was so exciting, amazed that it was so enlightening. So does the American public know right now that they would get a kick out of an Oxford-style presidential debate? Probably not, but I'm pretty sure that they would.
John Donvan, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure, Virginia. Thank you.
John Donvan, host and moderator of the debate series Intelligence Squared US. Now you can catch it as a podcast or watch him in action tonight. Their latest debate is called Is Free Speech Threatened on Campus? And it's going to be streaming live on the website intelligencesquaredus.org. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org to find it.